When I learned that Samuel and Abraham were going to be singing this morning, I immediately relaxed as well as began smiling, and the smile continues. Because I knew along with that music and with Bobby's prayer and Jenny's message to the children, Claudia's reading and Carol Ann's cantering and Shine's sublime presence at the keyboard, it guaranteed that folk would come this morning and leave knowing they'd been to church. And that makes my job much easier. The part that's not easy is to decide how many of the four sermons I prepared to deliver. And I've narrowed it down to two, and we'll see what happens. But I do want to begin my remarks this morning with a few lines from Kentucky poet, a novelist, a farmer, philosopher, Wendell Berry, who just this week celebrated his 85th birthday, admonishing readers such as myself to laugh, be joyful though you have considered all the facts, and practice resurrection. I love that. Practice resurrection. And so these lines from one of Berry's Sabbath poems. I know that I have life. I know that I have life only insofar as I have love. I have not love except it comes from thee. Help me, help me, help me, please, to carry this candle against the wind. A little over a year ago, just prior to learning of Bobby's cancer diagnosis, I read two remarkable and, as it turned out, timely books. One is titled, There Is No Good Card for This, What to Do and Say When Life is Scary, Awful, and Unfair to People You Love, and I commend it to you. The second is by a woman named Kate Bowler, an associate professor in the Divinity School at Duke University, who happens to be an expert in the history of health, wealth, and happiness in American religion. Though not a practitioner of what she calls the prosperity gospel, Kate was feeling wonderfully prosperous and blessed when at age 35, she had the job of her dreams, a beautiful, baggage-free, stable husband she loved, and a hilariously narcissistic 2-year-old son named Zach. She also had, as she learned through a phone call, stage 4 colon cancer. You need to come to the hospital right away. Realistic about her prognosis, Kate plunged into treatment to which the cancer failed to respond. Then, thanks to the efforts of a powerful network of faculty and friends, she was accepted into an experimental treatment program that involved immunotherapies and more surgeries. I'm up to my 5th belly button, she recently acknowledged in a TED talk, and the 5th is my least favorite. She also wrote a memoir titled, Everything Happens for a Reason. Everything happens for a reason. And other lies I've loved. And other lies I've loved. In an interview at the time her book was published, Kate was asked, why do you keep working? Her reply, I think if we keep doing what we can do while we can do it, it makes the world a little bigger for us. And it shows people who we really are. Asked how she has changed as a parent, her reply, I decided that my new parenting philosophy is that I cannot protect my son or anyone from the pain of the world, but I can show him that there is truth and beauty in the midst of it. And if I can help him be equally open to lovely things happening as to bad things happening, I will have won as a parent. And when asked, did Christianity fail you? Kate replied, sometimes it felt like that. In part because the stuff people said using the Christian faith was incredibly trite, thoughtless, and sometimes even cruel. Many people wrote to her saying, "This illness is a proof you've done something wrong." Or, "This is a test of your character." Or, "It's part of God's plan because everything happens for a good reason." To which her husband replied curtly, "I'd love to hear the good reason my wife is going to die." Yes, she says, Christianity also saved the day, for when bad, unspeakable things happen to you or to those you love, people like those at a garlic festival, or those shopping for school clothes in a Walmart, or worshiping in a synagogue or in a church like this, you really want a brave faith, one that says in the midst of the crushing brokenness, there is something else there, namely the undeniable, overwhelming love of God. And that's what Kate felt and feels to this day, when now at age 39, she's glad to be approaching 40 and regularly thanks God for wrinkles. She also says that she doesn't feel angry. Rather, inexplicably, she feels love. "When I could have been feeling abandoned by God, I felt love. And I feel unity with people like me. I feel connected with people who have been jolted by events and yet have found that life is wonderful as well as terrible, gorgeous as well as tragic, that in the darkness there is beauty and there is love. And I feel most of the time that it will be more than enough. Beauty, unity, love, like a candle against the wind." With this in mind, think back to the passage in Isaiah that Claudia shared with us a few moments ago. Those beautiful lines written during a terrible time in Israel's history, a time called the Babylonian captivity. Historians all agree that was a low point in Israel's history. They had been flying high, the creation of a nation, the beautiful city of Jerusalem, recognition as one of the powers of the world. And then the Babylonians came along, attacked, carried off most of the people, and they plunged into the depths of despair, much like the disciples after the death of Jesus. They crashed. They just stopped dead in their tracks. During that dark and desperate time, Isaiah writes to them, trying to rekindle the candle of confidence, not only in themselves, but in God, who is always on the premises. "And so the old prophet sings, 'Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. God does not faint or grow weary. God's understanding is unsearchable. God gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even youths will faint and be weary, and the young shall fall exhausted. But those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.'" Now, whatever else they are, those are strong words of encouragement for anyone who has ever been knocked down, trampled upon, abused, oppressed, disillusioned, grief-stricken, or forced into exile, as many of you, our brothers and sisters from West Africa, have been. Properties taken, families disappeared, and you cast into the darkness of a diaspora. I've read some of your harrowing stories in Pastor Daniel's doctoral paper. And yet here you are today, bearing witness with your prayers and your presence and your song to the power of the prophet's promise that if you wait with humility, open-heartedness, and expectation, our God of holy patience, extraordinary imagination, consuming love, and yes, resurrection power Well, find a way to renew your strength, your courage, and your vision, so that once again you can mount up with wings like eagles, or at least run without growing weary, or, if nothing else, walk without fainting, carrying your candle of faith, hope, and love against the wind. All the impassioned vitriolic debate over immigration, DACA, visas, workplace, audits, asylum, family separation, squalor, disease, and death along the border, and the many stories that have been told to support one or another side of the narrative, prompted me to read a number of books, testimonies from people who have experienced the crossing of the frontier. Among those being a powerful set of books by a local friend of ours who triumphed over such poverty prejudice in politics. His name is Francisco Jimenez. Some of you know he's the former director of the Ethnic Studies Program and recently retired professor of modern language at Santa Clara University. Francisco was born in Tlacopaque, Mexico. And at the age of 4, wiggled like a snake beneath the wire fence guarding the border between Mexico and Arizona, and with his family entered America in search of a better life. For the first 9 years, they followed the crops, living in labor camps under circumstances almost as severe as those they left in rural Mexico. Moving from camp to camp, the children missed school, had little hope ever of learning. But then one day, as Francisco was about to recite from the Declaration of Independence, which he had memorized as a class assignment, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable," just as he was about to recite those precise historic words, he was unceremoniously pulled out of his eighth grade social studies class, and along with his brother, not his family, just his brother, Roberto, deported. Back in Mexico, the boys landed roughly, but they persevered. Eventually, they were allowed to return, this time legally, and with the help of a kind Japanese strawberry farmer who himself understood how it feels to be dislocated and forced into harsh and hostile circumstances, were reunited with their family. Settled in one place long enough to finish high school, Francisco broke through the obstacles in his life. And he worked hard, helped support the family, studied on the job. He slept little, achieved much. He had a passion for learning, fueled by the desire to become a teacher. Eventually, he earned a scholarship to Santa Clara, moved to Colombia, where he received his master's and PhD degrees. And over a lifetime of teaching and mentoring his students, he's written his simple books with their simple message: you can succeed even if you come from a difficult circumstance. You can work hard, get an education, contribute to your community. You can break through, reach out, and take hold. Asked how he sustained hope through those years on the circuit of poverty and deprivation, Jimenez says, "I attribute a lot of that to my mother. No matter how bad things were, she had hope. She would always say, 'God will provide. Things will get better.' I come from a family strong in faith. And one of the things I learned from my parents was that God allows us, like Jesus, to go through life with all of its struggles for a purpose, and even though we may not exactly know what that purpose is, we should work hard to find what it's all about. I see now the purpose of my life is informed by that experience I had as a child and a young adult. I went through that so I would someday be able to do something about it, not just for myself, but to document the experiences of many children and young adults who confront obstacles in their lives to keep them from breaking through. And how they manage eventually to break through depends as much on their courage, hope, and God-given talents as it does on the loving, compassionate, and generous people who commit themselves to making a difference in the lives of children and young adults. People who help them carry their flickering candle of hope and purpose against the wind. Are you one of those people? Bruce, my friend of 65 years, freshman football, Modesto High, is one of those people. A man with a heart for the marginalized, Bruce has dedicated most of his distinguished legal career to defending people, especially gay men who are frequently targeted by law enforcement agencies throughout the state, up and down the state of California and Fresno, Long Beach, and even at the state Supreme Court. Bruce has argued his cases and has time after time won. After learning that he had gotten all charges dropped in another case here in San Jose just 2-3 weeks ago, I sent Bruce an email in which I wrote simply, "Bruce, you are a candle against the wind." And he is. A candle against the wind. Are you? Amy Wolf, a young mother in Newburgh, Oregon, was stunned to learn that 6 teenagers in her local school district had committed suicide during the course of a year, and at least 6 more had tried. Troubled by this trend, which is epidemic across the nation, Amy decided she had to do something, because waiting for good things to happen, waiting for others to act, waiting for God even, is not passive. Waiting, like prayer and hope and love, is always active. So Amy listened to her heart and to her daughters and ended up printing 20 sets of signs that read, "Don't give up. It's not too late. Your mistakes do not define you. You are worthy of love. You are not alone. One day at a time." She then placed these signs randomly throughout the community in a vague hope that they would make a difference for someone, and they did. They're designed for those most vulnerable teens and young adults. Amy soon learned that the message of hope was age and gender neutral. She heard from an older man who was so depressed that he was contemplating ending his life. Then one night, as he went to pick up a pizza at the family supper, he took inexplicably a different route home. And that's when he spotted those signs in someone's yard. And he stopped in the street and he wept. And having wept out his fear and grief and sorrow, he went home, shared with his family his pain and struggle, and with their support, he got the help he needed. "You saved my life," he said later, a response heard over and over again as inmates, cancer patients, men in the barbershop, survivors, people with threatened marriages or lousy jobs or abusive spouses or boyfriends, literally as well as figuratively tattoo this simple message of hope on the arm of their soul. In less than a year, thanks to all the trickeries of media, those signs have now reappeared in every state of the Union and in at least 20 foreign countries. Miss Wolf and her accidental movement have also sold over 10,000 wristbands like this one, and thousands of postcards, pins, pencils, and decals conveying a life-affirming message, samples of which you can see over your coffee and conversation in the fellowship hall. Oh, and while you're there talking to Charlie Slayman, take a wristband or a pin and wear it, or give it to someone who needs to know that he or she matters. Don't give up. Don't give up. You matter. Amy Wolf insists that anyone can make a difference. You don't need to know what's going to happen, whose life you might touch, or exactly where it's all going. What you need is to recognize the possibilities and challenges offered by the present moment and embrace them with patience, faith, hope, and love, holding them, yes, like a candle against the wind. You know, the word synergy is, as you know, means working together specifically. It means two entities working together to accomplish something they could not accomplish by themselves alone. Well, I think that's what we're talking about here this morning. God and Amy Wolf, and my friend Bruce, Francisco Jimenez and his parents and teachers, Kate Bowler and people like her and like us, working together to find and live a life with purpose and meaning, integrity and courage and forgiveness and love and power, so that even if we fall and fail at something, even if we have to squirm like a snake under a fence in order to work in a field outside Salinas or Watsonville, even if we have to flee our native lands or face a devastating illness, lose a loved one, you know, a child, a wife, a parent, we can double down on the life we have rather than lamenting the one we no longer have, realizing that death itself is not the defeat. Not living, that's the defeat. And that's a choice we get to make each and every day. You don't have to choose life, but you get to. That's the point I'm making. You get to. And if you do, you will make the world a little bit bigger and better. And yes, brighter, Jenny, for yourselves and for others. A candle against the wind. Your choice. Thanks be to God. Amen.